Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight number 555 for comics originally released on March 28th, 2018. Now, starting us off in DC is I'm going to get these names wrong. I've not adjusted to the new thing. They've had it for a while. It's Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps, and it's number 41. This is not to be confused with Green Lanterns or, you know, Green Lantern Singular or the Green Lantern Corps title they've had in the past. They found a surprising number of ways to juggle up the titles on these things over the years.
That being said, I think this would be the flagship Green Lantern title.
I think it's toss-up. I don't think there is a flagship right now.
Not over Green Lanterns?
I think Green Lanterns has the more flagship name. Hal is the more flagship character.
Okay, interesting.
But between the sales, because typically when there's a flagship title, there's a group of, like, you know, a handful of titles, one of which is selling head and shoulders above the rest, and there's kind of no debating it.
Okay, gotcha.
When it was like Green Lantern versus Red Lanterns and Green Lantern Corps or Green Lantern New Guardians or whatever the other ones were, Green Lantern was the one selling head and shoulders above the rest.
Okay.
But I think that's just gone away towards, or goes towards how the publishers have really kind of eroded the concept of a flagship title.
No, that's very true. It used to be there was Uncanny X-Men, and then it went to regular X-Men and Amazing X-Men and Astonishing X-Men, and before you know it, you have blue, red, gold, and all the publishers are doing this.
Yeah, and it's interesting because this title has Hal Jordan, which is, you know, one of the things I was going to get to is at one point in this arc, I think it was early on, John Stewart was referred to as the greatest Green Lantern of them all. And at one point, Hal was the greatest Green Lantern at the mall. At one point, Kyle was the greatest Green Lantern of them all. At one point, at least if you ask him, Guy Gardner was the greatest Green Lantern of them all.
So they've all been the greatest at some point in time.
They all still are, depending whom you ask, I suppose.
Interesting.
And all of them are showing up in this title.
Okay, yeah, correct.
So, I mean, I think there's a case to be made that this is the flagship. It's just not a clear-cut case.
Yeah, for me, being a newer reader to DC, this one had more of the continuity tied into it and the previous storylines tied into this book and had the big names. So when I looked at Green Lanterns with an S, I saw it as more like the beginner's step in with new characters and new lanterns. So that's how I looked at it.
And that's a fair way to do it, because I agree that those other characters in that other title are the rookies.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. But I've actually, without having the background and the continuity, I have loved Hal Jordan Green Lantern Corps. I've loved it.
It's had some good stuff. Now, it's interesting because I've been behind on my reading. So we're recording this on Tuesday night. And Sunday night, I reread number 37 and then read 38, 39, and 40. And then last night, prepping for this, I read just 41.
Wow. So you read almost the whole arc at once.
I read the whole arc at once. Almost at once. I intentionally split this one off by a day just to give it a little space. And it was funny because as I was doing that, I'm like, geez, there's five issues here. I want to make sure I keep them straight. I did kind of a one-liner for each of the issues in it.
And
it was interesting because what I have in my notes for 37 is Hal and Kyle go to planet Zod, for lack of a better name, or the planet Zod is relocated to.
Correct. Jakul, or I think that's what they're calling it.
You're right. That's the right name. Not to be confused with, what's the one from the Star Wars stuff, which has a similar sounding name?
Oh, I
Jakku
know what you're
or whatever.
Jakku, yeah.
Yeah. I'm sure it's sheer coincidence. Anyways, Hal and Kyle get there, they fight Zod and his family, and Hal and Kyle lose the fight. That's pretty much 37.
Pretty much.
Issue 38, Hal and Kyle are captive. Kyle is badly hurt. Hal breaks out and uses his ring to send Kyle to get help.
Yes.
That's pretty much the issue.
So you have a depowered, one Green Lantern loses his ring.
Well, technically they both lose the ring, but Hal gets his back, gives it to Kyle, and gets Kyle
and
out
Hal's
of there.
Left, yeah, as a yeah. normal person.
And then in 39, Kyle brings eight other Green Lanterns, including Guy and Kilowog, back to rescue Hal, because that's the kind of guys they are. There was a little bit more going on because the Guardians were debating should they go rescue Hal or not, should they re-imprison Zod or not, and, you know, debating as Guardians are wont to do. And then in issue 40, the Green Lanterns fight Zod and his family, getting defeated just as Hal breaks out, yet again, ready to fight and take on Zod.
Exactly.
And then in this issue, the bullet point I've got is Hal fights Zod, wins, and the Guardians arrive and let Zod go free.
Pretty much. If you want a quick review, that's what happened.
And I'm like, okay, five issues, a bunch of fights, just enough plot to kind of string it along, and almost get from cliffhanger to cliffhanger to cliffhanger to, frankly, not that satisfying of an ending.
Yeah, the ending, it was kind of a setup. I'm not going to say what happens for future things, a future maybe confrontation, but yeah, it wasn't that satisfying. You expected something big, and it wasn't as big as what you may think.
I'm thinking I would have enjoyed this issue more if I hadn't just read the arc in rapid fire.
Probably, because I really enjoyed it. I liked it, and I've been kind of current. I'm only 2 weeks behind right now, so I have two weekly stacks sitting there. Mm-hmm. So I had read 40, I think it was last week, and then just read 41 yesterday, Monday.
I mean, it's not bad stuff, but it's a little light.
Yeah. His writing style, it's very decompressed in here, because especially the first half of the book with the battle scene going on, you can read through that in just a minute or two if you want to.
Yeah. What I found a little frustrating with the arc overall is there were some very interesting parts, like how Kyle was acting more like Hal while wearing Hal's ring because of the nature of Hal's ring.
Yeah, it's like, part of his essence and who he is.
They could have explored that a lot more. That would have been cool.
Yeah, instead of just showing him kind of like shaking and pinned up and, you know, I have too much power. That was pretty much the extent of it.
Well, and the phrasing of that Hal would have used that Kyle would not have, things of that sort.
Yeah.
I mean, there was a little bit of compare and contrast to the two characters throughout the arc, which was good. But a lot of this is... who's the greatest Green Lantern of them all? Let's go fight Zod again. And frankly, I mean, we've seen more of Zod, I think, in the last year than we saw of Superman in a couple of years.
I've seen him a lot. I've seen him in Suicide Squad. I've seen him in Green Lantern. We've seen him in Action Comics all over the place. So it's been interesting. And one thing you were telling me, I don't know if you know that was a fact or not. You were saying we may be looking at this planet Jakul that Zod is setting up, maybe now, and then in Action Comics when he goes into the future with, I can't remember the time-jumping character.
Booster Gold.
Booster Gold, yeah, that may be this planet in the future. I don't know if that plays out and if that's true. They didn't mention it at all, but it could be.
I'm thinking that was the case, but you're right. We've got no idea. They could have relocated again.
Exactly, but it would make sense if they tied that in. But this whole arc, it seemed like it may be setting up a bigger battle between the two, because all through here, I think it was like, I guess it must have been in the second issue of this arc, you have that, and excuse me, I can't remember the names, but the mechanical robotic cyborg Superman,
the Eradicator.
The Eradicator. He has the ring, and he's kind of downloading information the entire time over all the different episodes, and he basically lets Zod know in this issue, I've completed it, I've downloaded information. So that, I think, is going to be a big story point, possibly, for the future. Maybe an event-type story. Who knows?
If it's not, it's disappointing.
Yeah, because this could have been a bigger battle, and I'm hoping that maybe they're playing around with this for maybe next summer's event or late fall event. Who knows? If they're still doing September events at DC, they used to do that every September. But it seems like it's something that could be a big story built around that.
We're seeing too much of Zod for them not to be building to something.
Yes, I agree. And I'm interested to see how it plays out, because this is all kind of new to me, and I've been enjoying Zod.
I mean, what they're doing here is fun. It's good. There's an aspect where I'd like a little bit deeper plot, a little bit less decompression, but I am enjoying what we're getting.
Oh, me too. And I had a question for you. Near the very end, when everything's kind of cooled down, I'm trying to remember what their names are, when John Stewart, he comes in and he kind of breaks it up along with the Guardians. Mm-hmm. He said his big thing was, you know, the Guardians have, you know, meddled in everything in the past, and now they're trying not to meddle. They don't want the Green Lanterns there causing problems with Zod. So how much of a interference did they play in past issues or past story arcs or past, you know, iterations of DC Comics.
In the past, the Guardians have had a very, you know, we are the elders of the universe, we know what's best attitude.
And so they're very controlling, almost.
Not as much as the Controllers, who we saw in the last arc.
Okay.
But not that far, because they are literally from the same planet, they just evolved differently.
Okay, I just wasn't sure, because I haven't seen anything where I've seen them be meddlesome and things that are going on throughout the universe.
It goes back a ways. There have been times in the past where they've meddled very much in the lives of, like, Hal and John and some of the others, to the point of almost, you know, pulling strings to lead them down a particular path.
But okay, interesting.
That's going back to, like, the 80s.
Oh, okay, a long time ago.
So now, it's not unfair, it's just not necessarily all that current, because frankly, we haven't had Guardians for a couple of years.
Yeah, and this book was a very light read. It's kind of breezy, and it was a little bit unsatisfying at the end, and unless you look at it as a build-up to a bigger event, which it must be headed towards.
I saw it as world-building, both in terms of what they're doing with Zod, also that bit you were just talking about with the Guardians. Hey, they're going down a different path.
Yeah, so I'm interested. Venditti, he is a great writer. I want to see how he's going to let this play out. Now, just out of curiosity, what did you think of the art in this book?
I thought it was good. I'm not going to say it was, oh my God, brilliant or something, but it served the story well. There was some aspects of it, and some of it may have just been the coloring. Some of the things in the background were a little washed out, whatever.
Yeah.
It was, to me, it's good. It's above Journeyman, but it's not to that kind of, I almost want to say name brand artist, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, oh, I know exactly what you mean. Like this one, I think the artist, his name is Peterson. Is it Brandon Peterson?
Brandon Peterson, yeah.
Brandon Peterson, okay. And the other one who's the artist on this book for the other biweekly or issue is Van Sciver. Now, Van Sciver, I think, is a much better artist than Peterson. So this was like, Peterson's art's just a little rougher, and it seemed at the very end of this issue, the panels, it seemed like he was getting rushed or he was running out of time. Because earlier on in the big splash pages, you see a lot more detail. And then as the issue went on to the smaller panels, it looked hurried, really hurried. So I think he ran out of time, but Van Sciver's a much better artist as far as Hal Jordan goes in the Green Lantern Corps.
As far as almost anything goes, I mean, Van Sciver's really good, but there's no way he could keep up the pace they would need for this kind of a release schedule.
Exactly.
And I would worry a little about any artist who, at the end of the issue, their work's a little shakier than it was at the beginning, because it implies a pacing problem in how they're doing their work.
Yeah, that's what I think he almost dedicated more time to the two-page splashes that he had in there. And when it got to the small panels, he just kind of rushed through them. That's just how it looked to me. I was looking, I was just noticing a difference in the quality. I was like, huh, it fell off there.
There's definitely some stuff about the art that if I wanted to nitpick, I most certainly could. It doesn't get
but
in the way of storytelling,
good.
Though.
Correct. Yeah, it was good art. It was really good. It's just different than Van Sciver, and it was good, and I actually think it's better art than in the next title we're going to be talking about.
Yeah, could be. For this, I'm going to go with a B-. I think there were aspects that could have been a little stronger, certainly the arc overall, but it's a fun read. I think with the Green Lantern Corps in particular, given what Geoff Johns had done in the past, some of the really talented artists they've had, there's a high bar in terms of what's been done before to meet up to. And this made a good attempt at it, but I've read better stories.
Yeah. Well, I'm hoping to read those stories, the better stories, because I actually bought all of Geoff Johns' run, the three different Omnibuy that came out. So I have them stacked up in my stack, ready to read, and hopefully I get to those soon. But this issue was good because I hadn't read the five issues, you know, right after one or right after the other. I saw it as like a building towards a bigger event. So I enjoyed it. I gave it a B. And I thought it was a good issue. If you're reading this title, I think you'd enjoy it. Above average comic.
I can definitely see that. And I think for me, it felt a little redundant.
Yeah.
Issue after issue.
And probably reading them that quick, it probably would come off that way. Because when you were reading back, I was like, oh yeah, I remember that. I remember exactly what you were talking about.
Well, it's like when I marathon some TV shows and you get the previously on, and I'm like, wait, I just saw the previous episode. That's not how they delivered the line, or that's not even the line they delivered.
Yeah.
You know, certain things pop out. It It doesn't make either way, reading either the equivalent of Intrade, which is essentially what I did here, or Month to Month, a better reading experience. It just makes them different.
Definitely. Definitely.
Shall we move on to our Marvel pick?
Definitely. This is an interesting one.
This is Daredevil number 600. And I'll be honest, this was not quite what I was expecting, because I was thinking 600, 599, oversized anniversary issue. I was expecting a little more pomp and circumstance around that.
Me too. I was, believe it or not, I bought the bundle, and I'm pretty sure you bought the bundle from Cowabunga Comics. So I didn't realize it was a $5.99 comic until I got it. And so I got it, and I was expecting, wow, this is a big meaty tome. But after reading it, I was like, this thing should have had that little backstory tossed out. It should have been a $4.99 issue, just from what it was.
It's funny you say that, because that backup story I thought was a nice kind of a run through Daredevil's life from Foggy's perspective.
Yes.
It was good. Would I have rather they dumped it and been cheaper? Yes.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly the boat I was in. Like, even with that, you know, we've reviewed another issue in the past where they tack on the dollar and they give you this little 8-page story. And I think most readers would prefer not to have that 8-page story. You know, collect them together if you want to and release a big issue. But when you start getting up to $6 for a single issue, that's pricey. That's really pricey. If I wasn't getting my discount, I may not have bought it.
I completely agree. These comics are too expensive at that point. They need to be a little friendlier to the reader's wallet.
I agree. So what did you think of the main story?
You know, it's mixed feelings on it. There was an aspect of some of it I should have seen coming. I mean, Daredevil's been trying to take down Mayor Wilson Fisk, a.k.a. the Kingpin. At the end of the last issue, he'd assembled a bunch of heroes, Luke Cage, Moon Knight, Spider-Man, Iron Fist, Misty Knight, Echo, Jessica Jones, essentially the modern Defenders, plus a few other street-level characters. And they're gonna, you know, help keep the peace while Daredevil's, you know, doing what he wants to incriminate Fisk. And I'm like, you get that many characters involved, particularly a few of the particulars, things aren't gonna go to plan. We know this.
Yes.
And doing it on an anniversary issue felt a little odd. I almost would have liked it if they had had those characters dress up in the various different Daredevil costumes over the years.
That would have been cool.
As a way to, I mean, have Luke do the armored version or something like that, and something to celebrate the history of Daredevil, have the characters in there, and also really throw Fisk off his game of, Daredevil's been spotted here or there or there or there, you know, kind of thing.
Exactly. Yeah, it was very interesting, all the characters being pulled in, and then it was kind of anticlimactic with all the different characters that were brought in, all the street level characters. It just kind of fizzled out, that whole aspect. But I liked the play at the end, the big twist that Charles Soule put in there, because I actually didn't see it coming. So I was surprised. I was like, you start reading, you're like, okay, it's going this way, and then it swerves, and I didn't expect it. Did you expect the twist at the end?
I did not expect it, and I did not like it.
You didn't like it either. Okay.
I thought the last four pages seemed to happen completely out of the blue.
It was.
And it's like, wait, what just happened? What's going on here? Huh?
There were no seeds planted that I knew of.
Exactly. I didn't think that was fair play. The reveal at the end felt cheap, not because it wasn't set up. It was. But because there was so much basically telling us, nope, never going to happen kind of a thing. That's not how it works.
Yeah, there were a couple things I did and didn't like. I like when there's a twist when I don't see it coming. But I don't mind there being that thing that I don't see coming if there was some seeds planted along the way. Unless there was some banter, you know, four or five issues ago that I don't remember anything being built up for that.
There was something in 598. I went and checked.
Oh, okay.
And only if you've read the reveal does it make sense. Otherwise, it's not telegraphing this at the least.
So it's just like legalese talk when they're talking in there, and you're just kind of breeze over it.
It was something that the conversation that was going to happen next in the scene is what would have been the seed being planted. They just lead into the conversation.
Oh, okay. Makes
and
sense.
Again, it wasn't there on the page, so it's not like, well, I see this coming. Yet there had been so much time devoted to don't expect this, it doesn't work that way kind of a thing.
Yeah. And almost where this twist leads us, it's I don't like the direction that possibly Daredevil could be headed. because that seems so uninteresting to me. I don't know about you, but it got really, really this, ever since Charles Soule took over it, really into the lawyer aspect. Whole issues that took place in courtroom. And that's not really fun unless you're a lawyer like Charles Soule. And the way he's taken this is even more in the, I guess you could say, legal route. So I'm like, I don't know how that's going to be a fun read.
I like a good legal drama.
Okay, and so you might like that.
There have been aspects of this that I thought have been good. This whole bit with the mayor, not so much. The problem with this title is they've gone a couple of different directions and revectored. You know, is he a prosecuting attorney? Is he a defense attorney? Oh, he's working for the mayor now. How about this? Is he disbarred? I mean, if you look far enough back, he's been literally all over the map in terms of, you know, is it New York? Is it San Francisco? He's back in New York. What's going
all
on?
All over the place, yeah.
So for them to, it seems hard for them to build up any real serious story momentum in some cases. And aspects of this issue felt a little predictable. Aspects of it felt completely unpredictable in a not good way. If there's a twist and it's like, I didn't see that coming and I should have, I'm cool with that. But if it feels like, wait, I just flipped pages and what happened? That bothers me.
That makes sense. There were some other things that I just found odd in this, even beyond the twist. Like, if you remember the fight between or the big confrontation between Fisk and Daredevil.
Mm-hmm.
So they're meeting up and they're having a fist and or they're having a fight and Fisk is getting ready to hit himself in the face with a sledgehammer, but he ends up kind of beating up Daredevil at that point and he literally picks up a sledgehammer. And as far as I can tell from the art, breaks it over his head, over Daredevil's head.
Breaks the handle of it over his head. If it was handle. The hammer of it, I think Daredevil wouldn't get back up.
Yeah, he'd be decapitated. But he seems to be up and fine in the next, you know, when they're kind of hauling him away to jail. I'm just like, even breaking an axe handle or a sledgehammer handle over someone's head, I'm like, I think it would do more damage than that, where he wouldn't be just wheeled away and talking coherent, you know, completely fine. There's no ambulance. It was just interesting. I just found it like, that's pretty brutal, but he didn't seem like he got hurt.
What got me with that scene is Daredevil seemed like he's had a bit of a plan, even if it's a little impromptu.
Yeah.
I was expecting at that fourth page from the end, when we get a twist that I didn't see coming, I expected there to be basically video footage being shown at the rally of this confrontation we just saw.
That would have made sense.
And you see, sure. That's the difference.
Exactly.
The fact that you said that would have made sense implies, of course, what they did didn't, which is the problem I have with it.
Yeah, the twists in here weren't done as well as they could have been. You're correct.
And I think Soule is a better writer than this. I didn't feel that this was the celebration of Daredevil that an issue 600 could have and arguably should have been. And the direction they're taking the story seems a little weird.
Yeah.
And this wasn't either the beginning of a story, the end of a story. It's just kind of a middle chapter that's oversized.
Yeah, and that's exactly how it read. And one other thing that was a little bit weird to me, the cliffhanger on 599, which I don't want to mention it in case anyone out there hasn't read 599, where there's this big thing where a character is going to end up hurt. And they don't even get into that until like four or five pages into the issue. You're left on a cliffhanger. You're like, I'm like, okay, they just changed direction here completely. Why isn't I even being mentioned? I'm flipping through there. I'm like, oh, okay, here it is later on that they start talking about that. But the fight that happens between Blind Spot and Muse, the inhuman guy who's a serial killer,
mm-hmm.
That ended so unsatisfying, that fight.
I thought that entire subplot was unsatisfying, but I'm not a particular fan of either of those characters. I was at the beginning with Blind Spot, but then the direction they took him I didn't care for. The whole Ten Fingers stuff and
yeah.
Some stuff there. I felt the whole thing just was detracting from the Daredevil story, and
yes.
Like you said, it wasn't a satisfying conclusion.
No, I mean, there was all this buildup, and Muse was over several issues and, you know, defacing the buildings. He's a serial killer, you know, and that was the whole premise. Daredevil's wanting to stop him as a superhero, but he's, you know, a deputy mayor and living the two lives. And then there's this little fight that plays out, and I was just like, and that's it. I don't want to say what happens for the readers out there, but I was just like, it just made no sense. He built up this big thing and just for it to fizzle out. You know, literally just fizzles out. Boom. There it is.
Well, and there's there's some story directions you can take a character in that effectively become a dead end.
Yeah.
There's not something worth doing with the character afterwards, or not something you can do or whatever. It just it locks the character into a certain mode or situation. And they've spent too much time building this Muse character up to go that way that fast.
Yeah, it was just like if you're going to dedicate an entire arc or several issues to this guy, this big bad, it would be like in the Green Lanterns issue or the Hal Jordan issue, if they would have built up Zod and all of his people on Ja'Kul and it's over, boom, done. It just would have been like that built towards nothing. You know, that was kind of unsatisfying, and that's exactly what this was. So I was just disappointed with that. And then Ron Garney has rough art as it is, and it's kind of an acquired taste. I don't mind it, but it seemed like this issue his art was subpar, like not as good as his art in the previous issues.
I think there have been some pages that were better, but I thought a lot of it was sketchy in places.
Yeah, very sketchy. Very, very sketchy. And out of proportion, too. A lot of the images, stuff was just off.
Yeah, there were some places where it was just unsatisfying art. And
yeah, so
he can do better. I've seen him do better.
Exactly. He can do better. And Charles Soule is a good writer. I know he could have done a little bit better on this. And it's $6. It just left me a little bit sad. I'm just like, when I say sad, I'm not literally crying over it, but I'm just like disappointed would be more the word to use.
You know, it's funny because the other thing that disappointed me a little here and stuff is in a lot of these cases, they've done here's the cover gallery of stuff. And I'm like, where was that here? I mean,
it's the big issue, and this was the big legacy thing, and now some things are getting relaunched at number ones with the fresh start, but you would think they'd have something more legacy about it, other than, you know, Foggy throughout the years at different points of view, that small little story at the end. Because, I mean, like I said, this story was interesting. It was okay. It was good at points. Some points I liked it, but overall I was just not happy for the price versus what you get for it.
Yeah, but if you look at the Peter Parker 300, that had the cover gallery and stuff like that. There's been a little bit more
something of
that celebration of the history.
Yeah, and this one was missing that. It's true. It was missing it.
So this, I think, could have and should have been a little better than it was. Not to say it was bad, but it didn't fire on all cylinders, and a few things, the art could have been better, the twist at the end didn't work well for me. For the price they were charging, for the page count they had, for the talent they had on the book, I expected better than this, but I still liked what I got. I just wasn't overwhelmed by it. This is another one I'm going to go with a B- on. If you're a Daredevil fan, I don't think you'll hate this issue by any stretch of the imagination. It's good. It's continuing the ongoing story. But if you're not a Daredevil fan, I don't know that this would necessarily win you over either.
I'm with you there. If I was a newer reader to Daredevil, and believe it or not, there are some new readers out there because I was new to DC until Rebirth. And people don't think there's new readers, but every issue you need to write it like it could be somebody's first issue, and hopefully it'll keep them hooked. And this one, it would have left me wanting a little bit. I would have been kind of surprised by the art. Oh, the art's not so good in this. Oh, the story's interesting. It has some nice twist, and I would have thought first issue, maybe they built that up, but some of it wasn't built up. And there were some storylines that just kind of fizzled out, and it left me a little flat. So me, I just saw it as an average comic. I gave it a C. I would have given it maybe a B-, but with a $6 price point, I had to take some off for that.
That's a fair point. I think if I'd factored in the price a bit more, it might have gone up down to a C-plus or something, because you're right. The amount they're charging, there should have been more there.
I agree wholeheartedly.
Shall we move on to our other book?
Yes, let's do that.
Now, you were saying just a moment ago that everybody's a first issue of first new reader of something. This is one I'm a new reader of. Never read anything of this before.
Well, welcome to the party.
It is Squarriors number 3 of 4. This is from Devil's Due First Comics. Matter of fact, this might even be the first thing I've read since the two kind of reformed and merged into what they are now. So again, never read Squarriors before. And this issue's what, about a year late?
It's about a year late because when I originally read the first volume in trade paperback, probably 2 years ago, And I liked it so much. The Scoriers, originally it was titled Scoriers Summer, but now it's just Scoriers again, but Volume 2. I read the first two issues. They came out when they solicited them. And then the third and fourth I had pre-ordered with DCBS. And I've been shopping at Cowabunga for at least 8 months. And they finally got canceled and then they re-released. So I reordered them with Cowabunga. And so, yeah, these are about – this issue's about a year late. And that's pretty bad because my memory, you know, a year later, I can't remember what's going on.
Yeah.
Luckily, I was able to find those old issues, which is a lot of work, and get myself caught up again to what in the heck's going on.
I couldn't remember what happened before because I hadn't read what happened before.
That's true.
So I was coming at this completely fresh. The art, some of it is beautiful. It's got kind of a painted style.
Yes. That's what drew me into it originally, the art.
It's great to look at, but the downside with a painted style is often that it comes across a little stiff, a little lifeless.
Yeah.
And I felt some of that here, so I felt like I was seeing stills, not kind of the illusion of a moving image, if you know what I mean.
I could see that.
The way they did some of the, not some of them, all of the dialogue balloons with kind of a semi-transparent black with white text.
Yeah.
Didn't really work for me. It felt unnatural. Between the two, it was feeling more like almost, I don't say an illustrated story because that's not what I mean, but less traditional comic book-ish, even though it's following the same storytelling style. It's just like it had heavy accents or something, if you know what I mean.
Oh, I know completely what you mean. When I first saw this, I literally bought the book and the trade by looking at a picture and previews. They had like a full page ad from Devil Do First Comics, and they were showing it, and I saw the art. I was like, that looks amazing. I mean, because it looks like a painted photorealistic art. It's just amazing to look at. And it looked kind of brutal. So I was like, oh, that's right up my alley. I read Avatar stuff. I read Crossed, everything like that. So I bought it and I really enjoyed it. But the downside to a painted style with this artist, she gets very behind. I believe she's I don't know if there's I tried to look on Comic Book Roundup to see if either one of them have worked on anything else, but this seems to be the only comic project that those two people have worked on that I can find in Comic Book Roundup. So unless they're doing personal stuff or some stuff that's not comic related, I think this art is really slowing them down as far as getting the issues out.
I can totally understand this. This is not fast art to go do.
No, it's gorgeous art to look at, but it almost, I was something I wanted to talk with you about later. It almost would be, this would be a perfect type of thing for a traditional publisher route. Like if I'm a publisher, like let's say I'm whatever book publisher, I front them some cash and I'll be like, okay, you guys have a year to work on this project. And at the end of the year, we'll release it as a book because they can't do this single issue thing. And I think they need the income and they can't wait a year to release the book.
I agree that I think it'd be better for them to get all the stuff out in a timely manner. The problem I see with that just business wise is you don't have the recouping of the money incrementally.
That's true.
So it's a bigger gamble for the publisher or the creator. It's also a bigger gamble for the reader at that point because, you know, am I willing to go sample something at $3.99? Now, I say that having gotten a press PDF of this, so I didn't gamble $3.99. But I might do that on a comic, whereas would I gamble the $19.99 or whatever a hardcover might be?
Correct.
That's less likely.
Well, yeah, that's true. I see exactly what you're saying with that. Now, one thing, did you want me to give you a little context for this issue?
Well, I had one question.
Okay, go ahead.
Because this whole thing is kind of a slow start to the issue. We got these kids. They're taking out the garbage, so to speak.
Yeah.
And then they do that. We get a little reveal of, oh, that's what's going on. We page flip, and it's like, damn, I've got another comic here.
Yeah. And if a person goes and they read the old issues or they pick up the trade of the first volume, every issue starts with like a 3 to 6 page story where they're showing back in the 1980s where humanity, there's a plague outbreak. And so there's little snippets of stories all along. So they'll come out and they'll show this family that's kind of trying to keep away from humanity out in the woods. And something is outbroken and you'll have different people interact with them and say, hey, you know, the city's falling, you know, things are going bad. Or you see pictures of people dead in the yard, you know, that I don't know if they shot him or they didn't make it. So humanity, there's an outbreak, something that wipes out humanity, some plague. Now, on the flip side, they don't explain it as far as any of the issues go yet, but the animals have become intelligent, talking, or maybe it's just animals interacting, but they form societies. And so you have these squirrel societies, but there's actually other animals that are intermingled with the squirrels. And so you have to be open to reading an anthropomorphic comic when you read Squirriers.
I've read a number of anthropomorphic comics, everything from Mouse Guard to Usagi Yojimbo on up and down.
Okay.
What bothered me here was I felt like we completely switched stories on a dime that I wasn't really expecting. The connection between the two was completely lost. This may as well have been an anthology in my mind.
Correct.
The fact that we jumped 10 years into a different time of year, again, furthered it. And these things are intelligent. They've got weapons. They've got opposable thumbs, these squirrels, whatever. I don't know why. I don't know what's going on. I don't know why I should care.
And okay.
The art was great, but the stillness didn't help me get into the story. Even subtle things like the way they were doing the word balloons didn't help me get into the story. I couldn't find any of these squirrels who, frankly, maybe this is speciesist of me, but they all started to look alike. And I know it's look different, but I can't tell them apart.
It's completely true, because when I was reading it, unless they said their name, I had no clue who I was talking to other than Redcoat. Redcoat I could remember because he had red fur.
I've got to imagine this is what it would be like watching Power Rangers on a black and white TV.
Yeah, pretty much.
It's like, it's the Red Ranger. Which one's red?
No, this makes sense. If you're reading just this issue, you are going to be confused.
I mean, I think there was a basic aspect of the premise, which you just explained about the, you know, humanity getting wiped out, the animals becoming intelligent, whatever, lost on me. I mean, clearly that had to have happened to lead to the story, but...
Yeah, and it's really kind of cool because, well, I mean, one thing that's cool, which you may see as confusing, and I don't think they have the breakdown at the back of this book. They don't, because they're assuming you read the other pieces. There used to be a chart at the very back, and they actually gave you a chart showing what these groups are and who the characters are in the group. So they would tell you, and I'm going to butcher these, but it's like the Ammoni tribe, and they're basically the code of blood. And the Ammoni tribe... Ammoni, I don't know how you, A-M-O-N-I. They are led by a cat. His name is Ra. So they would show you on a chart, okay, this is what they are, and the Ammoni believe in the code of blood. And here's all his, like, lieutenants and other people that are around them. And then, because I would use this little chart when I was reading, I was like, oh, that's who that is. Then you have the Maw. The Maw follow the code of might. And they are another group of squirrels, although they may have some other animals mixed in there. And Redcoat, the guy with the red fur, is the leader. He's a squirrel, leader of the Maw tribe. And then the good ones, as I would call it, the ones that you're rooting for are the Tenkin. And the Tenkin follow the code of will. And so it's almost like in the code of will, and their king is their leader. His name is King, and he's a squirrel as well. But it's almost broken down where... I think this writer hates cats, and I like cats. I have cats, because the cats are the evil people. They follow a code of blood. They're always bullying the squirrels. That's the one part I didn't like about it. But the real fight was between the Maw and the Tenkin in the first volume, and then these later on, these cat people come in to team up with the Maw to basically kill these good-willed, nice, helpful Tenkin tribe. So they've broken up into almost their philosophies of life, these people, what they aspire to. And you have a Maw person who defects and becomes a Tenkin, and there's all this political intrigue that happens behind the scenes.
Interesting. While you were describing it,
that
I was...
That did not come out in this issue.
I was going to say, while you were describing it, I was flipping through the pages, and I can see references to bits and pieces of that. All of that was completely lost on me.
Yeah, and I feel so bad because... You were telling me you may check the first two issues and it would have made more sense, because just reading this, you won't get any of that. It's a one issue thing. You're going to miss it.
And I completely concede that jumping into the third part of a four-part miniseries, the second miniseries to boot, is a little unfair to expect to pick up all the pieces and kind of get some context there.
Correct.
But that's what I did nonetheless.
So how did it play out for you? You're reading, not having any context.
it was hard for me to get connected, get into the story. But part of it is it's a bit of a dystopic story, which I don't tend to gravitate towards. I didn't really have a good inroad into the bit with the squirrels to really get a context. I didn't feel it was as accessible as it could have been, but it's beautifully drawn. The storytelling itself, I think if I knew what was going on, I'd have been able to continue with it fine. But having skipped over that, to me, there was a barrier to entry there that I just couldn't get past.
That makes sense to me. That completely makes sense.
But if you tune into a primetime, you know, drama or whatever, you know, 35, 40 minutes into it, and you're like, I'm trying to figure out who did it. Well, it's like, wait, what's the crime they're solving? You know,
yeah.
You're going to have the same problem.
That's kind of where you are. You basically stepped in on episode 3 of a 4-issue or 4-season or 4-episode season, and you're like, what in the heck's going on?
Yeah.
And that's too bad because I know what you mean about the art. The art can be stiff because it's so photorealistic. Even though it's painted, it's jaw-droppingly gorgeous that somebody created this.
Absolutely.
I'm flabbergasted, but I don't want to excuse that this is a year late. That disappointed me, and it kind of upsets me anytime books are late, especially when I've been reading them, and it's hard for me to remember. I had to go dig up issues, which took me a lot of time. But after reading those issues again, I fell in love with Scorriers again, because this was something that I like dystopian future stories. I like the anthropomorphic story genre, so not all of them, but this was good. And this was, it's such a brutal comic. If you haven't read Scorriers and you like anything that's like Avatar-ish, you will like this book, because there's death scenes and weapons and disemboweling of other creatures and just stuff that you're going to be like, wow. And when you were talking about reviewing this, John, I was like, are you sure you're not squeamish before we read this?
Oh, I am. And that was one of the other things that, you know, this is just, it's not in my wheelhouse.
Yeah, you have to enjoy this stuff.
It's clearly outside of my wheelhouse. And this, I thought, was a fairly tame issue in terms of nothing made me go, it's like, oh my God, you know, kind of a thing.
But you can imagine, this was actually probably the least brutal episode or issue of Scorriers that I've ever read. Because normally, you hear the one guy, ZZ, he's talking about, I can't get maw guts off my clothes. I can't, you know, because he's literally disemboweling other characters and brutalizing them. It's, you can imagine how it plays out.
I'd rather not.
That's true. The only thing that I could tell you that I'm not sure that may tie in the front story with the backstory, because they haven't tied in other than setting up this humanity's been wiped out and here's these creatures, is they keep showing those two dogs at the beginning running and playing. I think one of them's named Sarge, the black dog. And later on in this episode, you know, the Ammoni tribe with the cats are coming to wipe out the Tenkin, and some of these characters that are out in the field, they kind of find a dog that's tied up, like kind of caught. I don't know if it's the same dog, because this is like 10 years later, be a very old dog, but maybe it's that same dog that's going to play into the storyline in the next issue.
That would be interesting. That'd be a good, yeah. Good way to connect the stuff.
Yeah, so I hope I'm not spoiling it for people out there.
That's speculation at this point, yeah.
Yeah, all speculation.
You know, it's interesting, because I think even if I had been reading this on a regular basis, the fact that it was so late, I don't know how well I would have remembered where it had left off.
Yeah, if I picked this up and read it, I would have remembered some of the characters, and I would have remembered the general story, but them losing the chart at the end and not giving like a little recap, like a Marvel recap, was really a disservice to this, because it was so late.
I think having some kind of easy re-entry ramp, if you will, for a comic is just a good idea in general, but I think it is an absolute must if more than a certain amount of time has elapsed since the previous issue.
I agree completely.
So for me, It was interesting to sample this. Again, not really in my wheelhouse or whatever, but the art, the artist is doing a terrific job. I couldn't get into the story, but there's an audience for this. I am just not part of that audience.
That makes sense. That makes complete sense. And for me, this is completely in my wheelhouse. Don't think of me as a demented person when I'm saying that, but...
Too late.
It's... This dystopian future. I love dystopian future stories. I don't know what it is. I like them. I always gravitate towards them and buy them up. I like things that have a more of a brutal spin to them. I read Crossed, so take that, you know, as a warning label there. And so this was completely in my wheelhouse. The art is some of the best art you'll see. It's gorgeous. And the story, only if you read the original trade that came out, the first four issues, and you read these other two, it's a really good story. So for me, I would say it would have been an A, but with it being so late, I give it A-.
I can see that, and I think there are some stories that are telling that longer story, or more of a long format kind of a thing, and I think with what they're trying to do here, they need that space.
Yeah,
and definitely. I think reading in a trades size batch would do better, but alas, I did not, and I think even if I had, this just isn't the title for me. I am squeamish. I am, again,
yeah.
I love the art, and I can see where the story's got a lot going for it. It seems well written. I didn't care about the story.
Yeah, and believe it or not, I remember when we talked about this as part of the review thing, and you mentioned Scoriers coming out, and I think I remembered asking you, are you sure you want to review this? Because I knew from you saying, hey, I don't like horror. I don't like things that make me squeamish. I don't like blood and guts. I knew what this story could be, and luckily this was a tame issue, but I knew this is not something you'd want to read. But for those of you out there like Drew, your previous co-host, he'd love it. He would love it.
It's funny you mention that, because the reason we reviewed it is Drew had arranged for us to get a preview copy of this. And, you know, since we had it and he told him we were going to review it, I felt a little obligated to do that. And certainly, I think publishers at this end of the, frankly, the more obscure, if you will, they need to have their stuff put out there. I mean, even if I don't like it, there may be people who realize, well, John just doesn't like this kind of stuff. It sounds great. I'll go check it out. And I hope people like yourself who are into this kind of stuff do check it out. It looks like quality stuff. It's
yeah,
just not for me.
I really took a flyer because I bought this trade and I bought these comics based on a picture and in a description, of course, a previews description. But having no knowledge of it, I went in and I've loved it. So Drew, I would say good pick if you're listening. I enjoyed it.
For me, I'm going to go with a C-, just because of accessibility, both getting into this and that scene break early on when it went from the 80s to the 90s or whatever. It totally threw me out of the story, and I just, not that I was deeply in it before, I couldn't get back into it.
That makes sense. I mean, not having the context, this would be a different read for me too. So I completely understand.
Yeah, I think if I
would recommend you guys give it a try. If you don't mind the squeamish stuff, give it a try because it is a good story if you read it all together.
Cool. I think if I'd gone in and done a little more research ahead of time and knew kind of some of that going in, I might have liked it more. But it's like I said, still not the title for me.
Understand. So just out of curiosity, now I was going to ask you about this after that last comic we talked about. Anthropomorphic books. You said Usagi Yojimbo, you've read.
Yeah.
What other anthropomorphic things have you been into in the past?
Let me think. Hepcats, which is a really obscure one.
I have not read that.
That was trying to remember what publisher did that. AnArt did it for a little bit. It actually originated at the University of Texas as a comic strip. And I know the writer artist. And it was just about a bunch of anthropomorphic, essentially college students.
There's some recent ones out that I've been reading. One of them's Animosity from Aftershock. And that one was really strong. The main Animosity. I didn't like the Animosity. There was like a spinoff while the artist was getting caught up on the main story. But the main story, I really enjoyed it. And if I don't know, did you ever read Red Rover Charlie by Garth Ennis?
No.
I think he put that out through Avatar, which is surprising because it's not a brutal story. I mean, there's parts of it where, you know, of course there's fighting or stuff that happens, but it was kind of at the very end a happy story. So if any of you guys haven't read Red Rover Charlie and you like Garth Ennis, great book. I like it a lot. And
the number of titles I've read from Avatar are few and far between. As a matter of fact, I think there's maybe one that I read.
Oh, wow.
They tend to be a lot harder core than I can tolerate, frankly.
No, it's true. They kind of marketed themselves that way. It's like anything goes for writers and artists. You know, they're really, they ride the edge a little more hardcore.
Yeah, for me, it really has been, you know, they've done, I think, one or two things that I've picked up. I'm trying to remember what the title was. It was the superhero title they did.
I'm trying to...
They did God is Dead. I read that.
God is Dead, yeah.
It got really hardcore. It was, I think it was Hero Worship was the one I'm thinking.
Okay, I haven't read Hero Worship, but I did read God is Dead. I think that originally the first six issues was Hickman.
And then 10, 15 years ago, they did some Stargate stuff, and I picked that up. But beyond that, it is not a title I really check anything out from.
Yeah, another one that was newer, which it kind of disappeared, but it was a good read, was Kurt Busiek. He wrote, it was called Tooth and Claw, and then it became Autumn Lance.
That was at Image.
That was at Image. Okay, that's at Image.
I have read that.
And I guess he just, it wasn't profitable, or he just left it. He's just doing Astro City now and looking to going towards TV with that, or a movie or whatever he's working on.
Oh man, I hope it goes to TV.
Yeah, because basically he has, someone bought the rights to it. I think it's TV, so it could be coming out. It could be coming to fruition. But I really liked his Tooth and Claw / Autumn Lands, and I was kind of sad to see it just disappeared. It was like in the second arc, and he just didn't write any more of it.
I thought that was a fun one. Other anthropomorphic stuff I've read, of course, Uncle Scrooge.
Oh, yeah.
Highly recommend that.
I haven't read that. I watched the cartoons when I was a kid, like DuckTales.
If you haven't read The Life and Times of Scrooge McDuck, well worth reading.
All right, I might have to check that out. I'm writing it down.
Did a back issue spotlight on that ages ago. Captain Carrot and the Zoo Crew is another one.
Is that good?
I liked it, but it was a comedic take on superheroes using, you know, anthropomorphic animals.
Oh, wow. Interesting. So, I mean, it's just a different spin. I used to hate that stuff. Like, I thought, animals talking or an inanimate object talking, it wasn't my cup of tea. But it seems like more and more that comes out, it's actually, I like it now. I've started enjoying the stories. As long as it's a good story and decent art, I'm enjoying it a lot.
That's entirely what it comes down to. Are they good characters? Are they good stories? Can I count Snagglepuss's current series, and how about Scooby-Doo Team-Up?
Oh, yeah. Scooby-Doo Team-Up. Yeah, those count. And then, hey, I don't know if you got your latest shipment from Cowabunga, but did you pre-order Battle Cats from, I think it was from Cave Something Studios or
Mad Cave Studios. I've talked to them over email, and I've kind of dropped the ball on that about reviewing maybe one of their things. I'll be honest, I was surprised both issues came out at the same time.
I was shocked. I was like, what's going on? I got two issues at the same time, so I looked to see if they were late or one was early, but they released both in the same week. I was shocked. I was like, what the heck's going on?
I think one of them was late.
Okay, one was late. Okay.
I'm assuming. I mean,
to figure out,
I'd have to go look up the order codes to find out when they were supposed to ship.
Okay. Just reading these really small publishers and the lateness, and then we got this. I was like, why did I get two issues of this comic? What happened? I was like, did Eric mess up? I was like, no, they both came out today. So
I had the same question, and the part that bothers me with that is, from a number-crunching point of view, it's a real pain because there's certain things I can do if I can assume a title is coming out, I don't know, once per week.
Oh,
that,
yeah.
That doesn't seem unreasonable. It's inaccurate, but there have been other times where, like, two issues of Captain America have shipped the same week. It's one thing if the issue and then, like, the annual ships the same week. I don't like it, but I can deal with it. But for both these things of Battle Cats, 1 and 2 out of 5 to ship the same week does not make sense to me.
It didn't make any sense to me, and I didn't know if it was just me and something that shipped around. I went on to Midtown Comics to check their website. I was like, nope, they got both issues in the same week. So I guess one was a month late, but the second one was on time, and how that happened, I have no clue, but I guess we have to read them back to back.
And so, preferably in the right order, which shouldn't be hard to do.
Exactly. So, you know, just with the small publishers, we've been having woes like that, like Battle Cats, Squarriors being a year late. And then I think you were on Cal Exit too, right?
And with Cal Exit, I flipped through the previews that I'd gotten in that same shipment, and they've solicited the trade.
And the singles haven't come out.
The trade collects issues 1 through 3 and previously unreleased material.
Oh, so they're just getting it. And 3 hasn't been released, to my knowledge. It's only issues 1 and 2 that have been released.
And it looks like 4 and 5 are getting canceled.
What?
So that's what I'm assuming from the ad text.
Okay, so maybe that this makes no sense. I don't know if I should buy this stuff. I'm kind of lost. I'm going to email Eric and be like, what do I do? Because I had them on back order from probably a year ago with DCBS when I was with them. I had all 5 or 6 issues ordered and one shipped and then 2's been sitting there waiting to be mailed for however long it's been now. They're holding on to my orders. But I just was surprised. I was like, how are they soliciting the trade in this previews? And the singles haven't even been... Okay, so now that makes sense.
Well, I've
so confusing.
Got one or two things, because I stopped ordering through DCBS with the October order form, so almost 6 months now. And I've got things from about a year ago that are still waiting to ship. So
yeah.
I've got a question into one of my contacts at Diamond. When do things get canceled? What's up with this? And I just haven't heard back, so I need to kind of ping them on that, see what's going on. I did confirm with Battle Cats that the first issue was supposed to ship on Feb 28th.
Okay.
And so it did ship a month late, and the other one shipped on time.
Well, I'm going to read those, and hopefully they're a good read, and maybe we can look at reviewing one of those in the future. Maybe like a issue 4 or 5, or who knows.
It's 5 issues, so if read those. If we like it, I'll get back in touch with them and see if we can get a... I've probably ordered the 5th anyways, but we should, if it's good, we'll review the 5th issue or something.
Oh, yeah, so I've enjoyed it. So, anyways, I was just curious, you know, like the frustrations with the small press and stuff. I've been kind of frustrated because I understand that amortizing the cost and breaking up the issues and how that helps out. And we're supporting the creators and the small publishers by paying this monthly cost and staying up to date on the story and piecing together these issues for months apart. You know, I'm reading 200 single issues and piecing those together month after month. It's work, but it's kind of frustrating at times when things get so late, and I don't know if there's any solution to that, but it's just been a frustration of mine.
I share it, but to me, part of it is what I kind of consider the story contract. That it's not written anywhere, but it's kind of the de facto thing of if a storyteller starts to tell a story, they're kind of sort of obligated to finish it in a somewhat satisfying manner. Not to say you're going to love the ending, but they'll at least give you the ending.
I agree.
And when I get something like Cal Exit, which is a current example, but there are far too many other ones where I've pre-ordered all of the issues, and now they're canceling 2 of them, aborting to trade, so if I want to get the full story that I've paid 3/5 for, I've got to rebuy those 3/5 to get the final 2/5.
That's just frustrating, yeah.
I mean, same thing happened to me with the Vigilante Southland trade at DC.
Yeah. Now, one good thing I can say, I did see a news article from Black Mask. They said, we're reevaluating our artist. And can they keep a schedule? Because I think it put them in bad light with what happened with that particular story. And I think they don't want that happening again, which is a good thing for us.
Yeah, and I can get where it's tough for an artist starting out or who's not doing this full time to get an issue out a month. I wish I had half the talent to even attempt something like that. So I give them a lot of credit just for having the artistic ability to try it. And I get the time challenge. They've still got to have their day job probably or whatever. It's tough.
It really is. It's almost like I know this isn't a solution. And I know this isn't going to solve anything. But I like that Marvel or DC or even a Valiant or whoever, they can almost call in a pinch hitter, you know, someone from the bullpen. Hey, where someone's behind on an issue or something happened. They got into a car wreck. Can you fill in and do some art for us? And it would be nice if in the future, and I don't know how feasible it is, if, you know, these creators could almost pay a fee and Image could have a bullpen of creators, you know, some fill-in artists because something happened, you know, someone got sick, something. So the comic doesn't go away or it doesn't get a year behind or it just doesn't go kaput. So we're not put in these weird situations, you know.
The other option is for these artists to team up with a writer and do a web comic that could be full page size or whatever. It doesn't have to be, but it can be. And basically be, you know, figure out how often you can get a page up and commit, get the page up once a week, once a month, whatever. Tell the story that way. Now, sure, at first people are going to read one page. It's like, I can't tell where this is going. It forces a less decompressed style. It builds up a deadline. It builds up a library of work that you can then later compile to trade.
That's true, because there's been some webcomics that have been coming out as hardcovers and as singles. I think it was last month's preview, there was a Barrier, which came out, which was Brian K. Vaughan, a digital comic that he released as these little episodes.
Oh, they weren't little.
Oh, they weren't little. Okay.
First one was like 50 pages.
Holy mackerel. Okay, forget I said that.
This was through Panel Syndicate. Drew and I reviewed that, actually. Barrier is worth checking out.
Okay.
If you speak English and Spanish, it's even more worth checking out.
I have a lot of people who work for me that do speak Spanish, so I'll be using them.
I don't, so half the thing didn't make sense to me. But it's one of those things, it's one thing to do a full-blown issue and dump it up, but then you've still got the getting the feedback and not seeing any return on the work. Whereas if you do Love and Capes did, or I think Stepan Sejic did it on one or two of his things that went to trade on DeviantArt or whatever, there are ways that for really no cost other than the time it takes to put the art and stuff together, you can be putting it up there on a regular basis, get into a cadence, and figure out, get into the work habit. Figure out what you can do, how quickly you can do it, and commit to that.
Yeah, Stefan, he did do that. He, on DeviantArt, it was a comic, it was kind of a web bondage comic, but he and his wife were working on, and they released it as trade paperbacks. I remember that. Sunstone is what it was called.
There's Sunstone. I think the wife also did, was it Bloodstain or something like that?
Yeah, there's several like that. So there's been a lot of comics that can do that. And I'm almost thinking if you're a really small publisher and you can build up your library and then go to press, even the Squirriers thing, they could have released it as a digital comic or worked on the panels and released it little by little, or even a Kickstarter that they could have lived on for a while. I don't know if they went that route, but something to get them the time to build it so it's not a year late. So it's not frustrating for you and I. You know, comics are hard medium to read, because if you look at you, you're an uber reader, kind of like me, and you're getting 160, 200 titles. Piecing those together when they're spaced out a month apart is just, it's amazing how the human brain can do that.
Yeah.
You know, not break.
Well, it gets even harder when I get as far behind as I do.
Yeah, you're in a deep hole. How far back are you now?
I think 350 maybe.
Oh my gosh.
I'm sinking into the hole because I've got some other stuff going on.
You're getting worse. You need to stop.
I know. It's not going to happen this weekend or next, so we'll see what happens after that.
I'm at 2 weeks, so I'm almost caught up, so I'm happy. But yeah, you're reading, it becomes mind-numbing when you read that much.
Well, it's part of why I read the entire arc of Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps, because I remembered where the previous story ended. I couldn't remember where this one started.
Yeah. Well, actually, you know, something to be said about that, you're basically creating single-issue trade paperbacks.
Yes, I'm also creating a large mountain of comics here that is getting a little unwieldy.
That's hilarious.
But it's one of those things, you just chip away at it. I don't got to read it all at once. I just need to continually make progress. You do that often enough and you build up, in this case, I whittle away at a small library, or you, as a creator, you could build up a small library.
It's true. And just so you know, this will have gone out after the preview spotlight, correct?
Correct.
Okay. I will try not to. My wife has talked to me to not submit 21 clips anymore. A record to never be broken.
They were good clips. I enjoyed them. I've listened to them. I've prepped them. I appreciate you getting them in early.
There was just so much good stuff this time. I couldn't believe it. And I was like, and the problem was I didn't count. I should have recognized when I was recording on a Saturday, I started to get a little bit of a sore throat.
That's funny. I have already edited your clips, Drew's clips, and Alan's clips, because those are the only ones that have come in. I've also done my own. Already the episode is an hour long-ish.
Wow. All right. That's hilarious. And hopefully the people get them in early, because I know you have the convention coming up this weekend.
Yeah, I will have just gotten back from it by the time this episode goes up. It's the Fan Expo in Dallas. They've got a great guest list. One or two people have canceled. They've added one or two more.
Cool.
Should be a lot of fun.
Awesome.
So anything else? Or actually, before we go, I want to mention that the previews teleconference is going to be on Saturday, April 14th, 7 p.m. Central Time. We do the comic page teleconference on Skype. There's instructions on the forum how to get on. It's pretty easy. You need a Skype account. You need to have sent me your contacts. You need to let me know you're going to be there that night. And then when you get on that night, just text me a message and I'll join you into the call.
Yeah, and I'm going to try and be there again. I can commit to probably 2-3 hours max.
Sometimes that's all it goes. Sometimes it goes for more. It's a lot of fun, though.
Yeah, it is. I had more fun than I thought I would because I'd never done it. It was quite enjoyable.
Yeah. And then the preview spotlight deadline for the next month is going to be Saturday, May 5th, that bright and early that morning of. If you need a little more time, work with me, whatever. That'll be the first month that DC has its own previews. So just like we do, the naming convention on the clips, I think is fairly simple, but it seems to confuse a few people, which confuses me. Anyways, the first letter is a lowercase p for the page. The next three digits are the page number. If it's on page 48, it's 048. If it's in Marvel, find where the Marvel thing would slot into previews, and I use that even number where we've got the cover of the Marvel previews in previews. So in this case, yes, it was page 248. After the page number goes a dash, if it's a Marvel one or next month a DC one, it would be an uppercase M or D for Marvel or DC, three-digit number of what page number in that previews it is, a dash, a descriptive thing of what it is you are reviewing, the title, ideally the issue number or volume number, or if it's an issue or volume, because there's a couple of times it's like, well, there's a trade and a single issue here. I'm not sure which one they picked. I gotta listen to the episode, or the clip. When I'm listening to the clip, I can't rename the clip. When I can't rename the clip, it's hard to get it right. And then after that, a dash and your name. Cool. The reason I do all that kind of craziness, which I don't think is that insane, it allows me to get all the clips into Audacity, sort them alphabetically, and the episode just falls together wonderfully.
That makes sense. It makes it easier for you to kind of eyeball where things should go so they stay in order. It makes perfect sense to me.
And to make sure that I haven't missed somebody's clips, because the last thing I want to do is have somebody spend the time, get the clip in, and I forget to include it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, and your preview spotlight weekly comic spotlight, me being the co-host, you struck again. You had me review that comic book History of Comics. I'm ordering the two trades.
And this, awesome.
Yeah, I enjoyed it more than I thought I would. So good. Those things help, and it gets new readers into new things.
Well, and if you've got, as listeners, questions on ongoing titles or properties that have existed before, you may want to check out back issues or back episodes of the Weekly Comic Spotlight or the Back Issue Spotlight, for that matter. See if the title's been reviewed before. Not to say it'll be, you know, your mileage may vary from where it's at now. It'll at least give you some context on it.
Exactly. I agree.
So anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
That pretty much does it.
Cool. Join us next time as we discuss The Curse of Brimstone number 1 from DC, All New Wolverine number 33 from Marvel, and Analog number 1 from Image Comics. The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.